Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
This is Sam Ben Ruby from the Grape Nation. We had an opportunity to go down to the Naples Winter Wine Festival and talk to a bunch of different winemakers. Tonight's show, we're going to talk to Piero Antonori from Marchese Antonori Wines. Welcome to the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network, your weekly wine journey. We are at the Naples Winter Wine Festival, benefiting the Naples Children and Education Foundation. Our guest is Marquis Piero Antonori, vintner and honorary president of Marchese Antonori. Marquis Piero Antonori is the patriarch of his family's wine business in Italy, with vineyards in Umbria, Chianti, Brunello, Bulgari, Napa, and many other places around the world. Piero, along with his daughters, oversee the six-century-old storied family wine business. Welcome to the Grape Nation, Piero.
No, thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. On a side note, at the Naples Wine Festival, there's a dinner every Friday night, usually in someone's home, and they invite a vintner, and they invite sommeliers and famous chefs, and I had the good fortune to be with Piero last night and break bread and drink through a lot of his wines. So that was exciting for me, and I got to get to know you a little better. All right, so let's get started. You stepped into the family business, I think it was in the 60s.
Absolutely.
And everything began then, but I'm going to ask you to do something that may be hard for you, and that is to talk about your family history, which is easy. The hard part is it could take days, so I need you to tell our listeners, frame the Antonori family.
Well, it's a long story, as a matter of fact, and we are very proud, obviously, of this long story, which has always been associated with wine. Even if at the beginning my family was in a different type of business. There were merchants, bankers, but at a certain point, and to be precise, at the end of the 14th century, we have a document, official document, which proves that in 1385, the family started to be really serious about producing wines. And since then, generation after generation, and
26?
Century after century.
Six.
Arrived until now, and yes, we have a record of 27 generation of the family that have been involved in the wine business.
Wow. So the 27th generation, is that your daughters?
No, it's actually my grandchildren who are starting.
Oh, it's
now.
Even beyond your daughter.
Yes.
All right.
My daughter represents the 26th generation only.
Okay, that's okay. We were talking last night, and you came across a little interesting piece of history about wine appellations. I know you're a student of history and of the family and wine, and you're always looking. So you can't tell me what you were telling me last night. You found out.
Yes, I found out something interesting for us, because last year, in 2017, we celebrated 300 years since The first appellation of origin was created for a wine.
All right, so tell my listeners what an appellation in wine is.
Appellation of wine is the official recognition of a certain name which represents an area of production and some regulation of production. So it is very important. In Italy, we have the DOC or right. DOCG appellations, which is denominazione di origine controllata or controllata e garantita, which is the highest right. level of control. In France, we have appellation d'origine. Now, even in the new world, like, for instance, in California, they have some AVA,
right.
they call them. Which are, you know, specific areas where certain specific wines can be produced and has to be produced according to certain regulations.
To protect the region, the winemaker, the integrity of the wine when it gets out to the market.
So it's very important for the consumer to know if a wine is belongs to an appellation or not. But, you know, it's something quite recent that has been developed. So the fact that the first one was created in Tuscany, actually by a member of the Medici family, Cosimo III, who was the Grand Duke of Tuscany at that time, but he appointed an ancestor of mine, Antonio Antinori, he was his name, to actually write the details of the appellation. So I have discovered that, which proves once again that my family has always been involved even in an administrative viewpoint.
Right. So just a curiosity, did you discover like a handwritten document? Or, I mean, what did you literally come across?
I discovered the document in which the Grand Duke appoints my ancestor.
Wow.
With the responsibility of writing this appellation. And we're very proud because everybody thinks that the first appellation of origin for wines has been created in France or in other countries, and instead it was actually in Italy, in Tuscany.
That validates it. And, do we know how much later France started designating wine?
Well, the most of the appellation in France, including the Bordeaux one, are in the mid 19th century, 1850 okay. something.
So, a bit of a time after.
Yes,
yeah, you got
yes,
a nice
yes,
head start
yes,
there.
Yes.
Well, that must have been fun and interesting to come across, which goes to show there is always things to discover, you know, certainly within the family.
Well, it's fun
yeah.
sometimes, you know, to discover things where the family has been involved that you didn't know before.
So I said earlier you stepped into the family business around the 1960s, and I'll let you take it from there, but when you got into the business and you stated, you know, that the family has been in the wine business a long time, the quality of the wine in the region was terrible, you know, and I don't think that was your vision to be in the wine business and continue what was going on. So you made quick work with vision of turning that around. Walk me through that, because there were a lot of important stages.
Yes, my father actually gave me the full responsibility of the company in 1966. I was already obviously involved in the company, but when I was only 28 years of age, my father decided that I was In his opinion, ready to.
Did he ask you or tell you?
No, he just told me.
Told you. Okay.
I was a bit shocked in a way.
All right.
But I thought I was a bit too young. But in any way, I took it, obviously, with great enthusiasm, this responsibility. And the first thing that I found out was that the world was already changing, you know, after the war, And
the war had a big impact on the area.
Absolutely.
Literally, yes, on the farms, yes, the buildings, yes, families.
Yeah. Everything was practically destroyed, and we had to start from scratch. Right.
And not everyone did.
And not everyone did, because it was a hard work, and it involved some risks, like everything that you do. But my father was a very courageous and full of entrepreneur spirit, and so he started again to rebuild the company, and at a certain point he decided that I should continue his work. And as a matter of fact, even the consumers, when I took over, were already starting to change. And we felt, and I felt, that the consumers were starting to change their approach. And instead of willing to buy wines at in big quantities, but at low prices, they were starting to be prepared maybe to spend a little more, but provided they could get a higher quality wine. And I felt that in certain areas, especially of Tuscany, but also other parts of Italy, we had the potential to produce much better wines than in the past, with the focus more on quality rather than quality. On quality rather than quantity.
It was quantity.
Because for centuries, the priority was to try to produce quantity at low prices. But instead, we had certainly in special areas of Tuscany or hilly and rocky areas where it was quite difficult to produce wine, but the quality could be really a very high quality. And we had also our own great varieties like Sangiovese, which had a great potential. And so I started actually to concentrate my activity in trying to maximize the quality that we
So what produce. The obvious steps with that is farming, you know, out
first,
in the field,
first,
grapes.
First of all, farming in the sense of selecting the right clones of the grape varieties. Number two.
Didn't somebody once send you Trebbiano instead of Sangiovese clones once? That's not what you wanted.
It was the usual things of the nurseries at that time.
It was a prominent.
You had really to make sure of what you were getting, you know, after.
And that's the last thing you wanted, were Trebbiano vines. That's funny. So it started with the clones, the grapes you pick planting.
Yes.
How
then
you
obviously the system of planting the vineyard, the density per acre, which at the beginning was very low, and then gradually we started to increase the density. Now, for instance, our standard way of planting is approximately 6,000 vines per hectare.
Is that low, medium, or high density compared?
It's a high density.
But the quality is there?
The quality is better because the production, the yield per vine is much lower in the same acreage, let's say. And there is more competition between one vine and the other, and that control is something which is able to control the vigor.
Right.
We don't want too much vigor, which means too much production.
Right.
So we want to keep it
you
down,
can control,
control it.
Right.
So that was another thing that we started to do. Then, obviously, all the part in the winery.
But go back for a second, because at some point the family owned property that you were growing grapes, but you went through an acquisition period, right, where you saw good properties available, you expanded, which became some of the greatest vineyards in the world.
Yes. The fact is that in the past we used to act like producers, grape producers, but also, let's say, négociants. We used to buy grapes from some of our neighbors and friends, and we had established a very long relationship.
Contracts and relationships.
And contact,
sure.
And sometimes of generations. And that was a bit our system, which I found at a certain point that it couldn't be the future of our company. And so I started to follow totally another type of approach, which was actually to own our own vineyards. And now all the wine that we produce are all produced with grapes grown, in our vineyards, estate grown,
right.
Which is the only, in my opinion, the only way to ensure the high quality of the product. Because you are prepared maybe to reduce the yield per hectare, but have a higher quality.
You approach it any way you want, seasonally, weather, yields. You know, you're not beholden.
We fully control our destiny.
Right. So we're talking about Tuscany, and we're talking about the Chianti Classico region mostly, right? I mean, the present conversation we're having involved vineyards in that area.
Yes.
And walk me through, but these vineyards had names or were named and became vineyards of wines, you know, that are very famous, which
yes.
I think people look to Antinori for. So put some names to the vineyards and times to it. Because is it fair to say you were the first Tuscan producer to really go outside of the box or the classification and not just make Sangiovese grape wines? Tell me about that.
This is something which I did since the beginning, because at that time the regulations for the appellation of origin, like Chianti or Chianti Classico, were sort of old-fashioned regulation, which couldn't allow a producer to produce a very high-quality wine, because there were regulation reflecting the old mentality of quantity rather than quality.
And nobody really pushed back. You realized,
no,
I can't do what I want this.
Exactly.
Right.
And so I decided...
Screw them.
To go away a little bit from the official regulation and produce wines in the way that I felt we could reach the highest quality, regardless the regulations. The consequence of that was that at the beginning of the 1970s, when I started in this direction, I had to release some of our wines just with the name of the vineyard where the wine was produced, but forgetting about the official classification.
You lost the classification
and
by
we
not
lost
abiding
the classification.
By the...
As right. a matter of fact, the wines were classified just as table wines, which is the lowest official classification, but very soon consumers realized that maybe the classification was the lowest, but the quality was the highest. And so that, created also curiosity.
Weren't you challenged with an image and a marketing problem? Because now you controlled what you wanted to do. You made the wine that you wanted. You had the quality, but how do you get the message out early on? That's not a problem today. What do you do?
Early on, we had to, go around the world.
Walk bottles to restaurants and
the
travel.
Restaurant, explain. And although at the very beginning, I must say, the wines were considered very controversial. But very quickly, and I was amazed about that, they created a lot of curiosity worldwide, and not only, with the opinion leaders in the United States or maybe in England, but even in Italy and in Tuscany, where people were used to the old
style
of
wine. You won over your own people.
And instead, in Florence and in Tuscany, a wine like Tignanello, for instance, who was, Tignanello is the name of the vineyard.
The first wine we're talking about in the 70s, was it Tignanello?
Yes, okay. Yes, absolutely.
So the reference to what we're talking about was the Tignanello vineyard and the Tignanello wine.
The first Tignanello ever released was a 1970 vintage, but the first vintage was actually still a Chianti Classico as an appellation,
right,
with the vineyard designation, Vigneto Tignanello. But then immediately the following year, in 1971, we created the Tignanello as a wine with no classification, no
right.
appellation of origin, just Tignanello, and with the grape varieties which were used for Tignanello, mainly Sangiovese, to keep. Because the idea for Tignanello was really to produce a different wine from the tradition, a wine with a much more modern and elegant style, but keeping the basic character of a Tuscan wine, and that was given by the Sangiovese grape.
Now, present vintage is back. It's predominantly all Sangiovese? You blend a little in the Tignanello?
Because the vineyard of Tignanello has always been planted with 80% Cabernet Sauvignon, a little bit of Cabernet Franc,
right,
and 20% Sangiovese. So,
oh, so
we continue to use the...
So it's 80% Cabernet.
Yes.
Now,
Right. No, you got me confused. No.
It's predominantly Sangiovese.
It's 80% Sangiovese.
Right.
That's why...
We'll get to the one where it's predominantly Cabernet.
Yes.
So... Listen, you had a vision, you executed it, you went out, and the product was so good, everyone, you know, loved it. That same decade in the 70s, towards the end, you released another wine, Solaia, right?
In, yes.
78?
Yes.
And same idea, right? You know, quality,
same.
You wanted to make the wine you wanted to make. But tell me about that wine. That was a different vineyard.
Yes. Solaia is actually the other side of the coin of Tignanello, in the sense that instead of being predominantly Sangiovese, it is predominantly Cabernet.
Right.
Sauvignon, a little bit of Cabernet.
But that in itself was controversial,
Controversial.
Right.
Although already my father in the 1920s had planted some Cabernet in the Tignanello vineyard, in the same vineyard, with very good results. And so after the war, the vineyard was abandoned during the war, but my father always recommended me not to forget that experience, but maybe to continue it, and so that's why I decided also to plant some Cabernet, and now, I mean, the blend, the Sangiovese Cabernet, it has become a classical blend.
Well, it became such a classic, it got its own name, and we call those Super Tuscans, right?
Yes, yes.
Which
absolutely.
Is basically the Cabernet.
The Cabernet, the vineyard-designated wines, the Super Tuscan, are all coming from a specific vineyard, like Tignanello, like Solaia, and others.
Right.
And most of the time, even if the regulation has changed in the meantime of Chianti, Chianti Classico, and other appellations, but most of the time, they continue to have a more generic appellation, the Super Tuscans.
Right. And, you know, we focused on those wines because that really is the beginning of the story, but you make a lot of Chianti. You are in Brunello. You are in Bulgari. You make probably one of the most noble white wines in Italy, Trevaro, in the Umbria region, a little south. Just tell me quickly about that vineyard. When did you start making wine there? That was an acquisition, right? You bought the property?
You mean in Umbria?
In Umbria,
yes.
Castello di Sala?
Yes, my father bought the estate in the 1920s, because as you know, my family started to produce wines and has continued to produce wines in the Chianti Classico region. Chianti Classico mean red wines. And my father felt that in the portfolio he needed also a white wine.
People were asking probably,
and
right?
People were asking for a white wine. And at that time, the what was considered the best region for white wine in Italy was Umbria, and especially Orvieto
right.
appellation. That was at that time the almost synonymous of white wine, Italian white wine, the Orvieto. So my father decided to buy in that area an estate. And since then, I mean, there have been obviously many, many changes. And in the mid-80s, we started to experiment also with different grape varieties and different type of vinification and aging. And a wine like Cervaro della Sala that we tasted yesterday night is the result of these type of experiments. Actually, what our idea was to try to do in the white wine field what we had done before
right.
with Tignanello and Solaia.
Right.
Try to do something to make a wine which was not really the traditional wine of the area, but with more complexity, aging potential.
Some of the vintages are almost Burgundian.
Yes.
You know, in the mouthfeel and the taste.
Absolutely. That was a bit...
It's a Chardonnay-based wine, predominantly.
It's a Chardonnay-based wine with a small addition of a local grape variety called Grechetto.
Grechetto.
Which actually gives certain natural acidity to the wine, which is important, especially for Chardonnay, which tends to drop the
right.
acidity.
It makes it a better food wine, too.
In warm climate, especially. And gives also, I say, a more special identity to the wine. It's not just another Chardonnay. There are so many in
right.
the world and so good.
Right. I guess it took years of blending and take, you know, until you realized the Grechetto and how much, how little made the wine.
Yes,
you
like
know, that
everything.
You like. Every vintage varies, but the blend is
everything
somewhere.
Everything takes time. In our type of business, you have to be very patient. Sometimes you wait 10 years, 15 years before you arrive to a final conclusion.
Right.
Or,
right.
And sometimes you never arrive to something.
It's always a work in progress. Quickly tell me, you have wine concerns around the world. You have a project in Napa, northern, you know, up north, is it Washington, around the world. So Antica is your Napa red wine?
Yes, we are lucky, very lucky, I must say, to have a beautiful vineyard in Napa Valley. Since a long time, because we started to be involved in that vineyard, although we were not the owners, but we were involved with other partners. We started in 1985.
Wow.
And so we have been part of the project of developing this estate. And then approximately 7 or 8 years ago, we have got the full control of the estate. And
which
we
is important to you.
Yes, we have started renovation of the estate with, you know, we have removed gradually most of the vineyards and replant them in a different way, in what we feel it's the best way to produce the top quality wines in Napa Valley. It's a very exciting project.
You're heading over there, right?
Yeah, I'm
after
heading
you leave
over,
Naples?
And for me, it's always very exciting to be there because
yeah.
I love the area. People are wonderful, and so at my age now, I try also to go there and spend a little bit more time. Maybe not go as often as I used to do before.
As long as you show your face. So, you know, the business is 600 years old. You've been making wines for a long time, but it seems like most of the expansion was under your guard. Is that fair to say?
I think it's fair to say. It's not my merit, but it is.
It just happened.
The circumstances, because in my period, especially, not only the wine consumption has gone up worldwide. If you consider that, for instance, United States, since a couple of years, has become the largest wine-consuming country in the world, and maybe only
surpassed France, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or Italy.
Yeah.
Not on a per head basis, but totally.
Right. I mean, right. Which is a big deal anyway.
I think that even 10 years ago, nobody would have predicted a trend like that. But it's not only the United States, but many other countries
in the world
are starting to become wine-consuming countries. So the consumption is going up, and at the same time, the quality, the reputation of Italian wine has gone up.
You've been blessed with a lot of great vintages.
So that's why I have been always, you know, condemned to take advantage of this situation.
Not for me. we're talking to Piero Antonori from Marchese Antonori. I'm going to let you go soon, but before I do, I want to talk about succession with you. You've been at this a long time, and this is a very nice story, and I want you to tell it a little. You have three daughters that are now actively involved in the business, and that wasn't necessarily how you saw it when they were little girls. So there's a couple of nice things to note. It's a great thing to have your family in the business, and I love the fact that women are running, you know, one of the most storied and famous wineries. So tell me quickly, you know, what you and your daughters are doing and what they're doing.
Yes, you're right. When they were young, I was a bit concerned about the continuity, you know, of the family and the company. Because at that time, it was not normal that a woman would run a business or... Now the situation, fortunately, has changed completely, and at least in Italy, I think there are more women involved in the wine business than men. So it has really...
It's good.
There had been a revolution also in that sense, which I obviously welcome. Yes, they are all three involved. One of them at the moment is living in New York, and she looks after the U.S. market. And the other two are based in Florence, and they, with different responsibility, they actually run the business. And they allow me to do only things that I enjoy doing.
Play golf?
Also, among other
joking.
Things.
Oh, you meant business stuff.
Obviously, I also enjoy being involved in the business, especially the production part, the winemaking, the viticultural aspect, which I love. And I try to leave to them, you know, all the problems and the headaches.
That's where it gets fun for you. You don't have to let them take care of it.
I am not fully successful in this idea, but I try to do it.
Do you still meddle and mingle more than you should because you can't help yourself, or you're getting better at that?
No. I'm getting better.
Okay. You'll get it eventually. We should probably mention one other person, and that's somebody that's been an important part of Antonori, and that's Renzo Cotarella, who is now the CEO working closely with you and your daughters. And his background is as a winemaker. I think he's from the Umbria region, right?
He is from the Umbria region. He has worked with me for over 40 years
now. It's a long partnership.
So he is a bit part of the family in a way. And he's not just a manager or something.
He's part of what Antonori is.
Yes, and he's very close to the family, to me and to my daughters also. So he has also an important role of transmission, you know, transferring the, because he is a bit even for his age, in the middle between me and my daughters, and he has my full confidence, but also the full confidence of my daughters. So he has a very important role.
That's important. It's almost like the son you didn't have either, too.
He's a great winemaker, and he knows exactly how I feel about the style of the wines. And so
you're in good hands.
We discuss for hours and hours every day about the quality of the wines, about the style, about what we should do to improve the quality. And so it's a very, very useful and pleasant type of relationship.
It's a good place to be with somebody that you've had for 40 years and your three daughters around you.
Yes, I mean,
the business sounds like it's in good hands, and the wines are so terrific. We don't want anyone screwing around with them. So that's great news. Pierre, I want to thank you for coming on to the Grape Nation. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. You're down here at the Naples Winter Wine Festival, donating your time and your presence and wines and all of that. So thank you for that. And I hope to make my way over to Italy and see you on your home turf, if I can get that together. So thank you again, and enjoy the rest of the festival.
Thank you, Sam. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.